Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After Midnight.
Natalie and her older sister Allison had taken several trips together over the years. They rarely planned more than a few weeks ahead, and usually chose places within a day's drive. Sometimes they went for a concert or festival, but just as often, they picked a town they had never visited and spent a long weekend exploring it. Neither was especially interested in the paranormal. They enjoyed old buildings and historic neighborhoods, mostly for the architecture and the stories of the people who had lived there. That spring, they chose a small town known for its 19th century homes. Allison found a bed and breakfast near the historic district, and they planned to spend 3 days visiting shops, museums, and anything else that caught their attention. The historic house wasn't part of their plans. They noticed it while walking back from lunch on their second day. It stood at the end of a tree-lined street separated from the sidewalk by a low iron fence. A sign near the gate advertised afternoon tours, and the next one was beginning in 15 minutes. The house had been built in the 1870s and belonged to the same family for more than 50 years before being divided into apartments. A preservation group later purchased and restored it. Much of the original structure remained, although several rooms had been altered. Natalie felt uneasy before reaching the front door. It wasn't fear. The house didn't look threatening, and other visitors were waiting casually on the porch. Still, Natalie stared at the front windows, bothered by the feeling that something about them was wrong. The house wasn't quite as she remembered it. The thought came so naturally that it took her a moment to realize how strange it was. She had never visited the town and didn't remember seeing a photograph of the house. The familiarity grew stronger once she stepped inside. Natalie knew there would be a parlor to the right before the guide opened the door. She expected another room on the left and the staircase farther down the hall. Those were reasonable guesses in a house of that age, but she also found herself looking toward one corner of the parlor, expecting to see a piano that wasn't there. She tried to dismiss it. Many historic homes had similar layouts, and a piano was hardly unusual in a restored parlor. Still, the room felt familiar without looking right, as though the furniture had been rearranged and too many things were missing. The tour continued through the dining room and into the kitchen. That part of the house had been extensively rebuilt after years of use as apartments. The original cooking fireplace remained, but most of the flooring and fixtures had been replaced. Natalie stopped near the doorway. The kitchen felt too large. She looked at the wall beside the fireplace and pictured a narrow staircase rising behind it. The impression was so clear that she could almost see the first step and the small door that should have concealed it. Natalie asked whether there had once been another staircase near the kitchen. The guide appeared surprised. She explained that a steep rear staircase had been removed when the house was divided into apartments. It had been used by household workers to reach the upper floor without taking the main stairs, and Allison turned to Natalie, waiting for an explanation. Natalie said it had been a guess, although it hadn't felt like one. She tried to remember whether the guide had mentioned the staircase earlier, but she was almost certain she hadn't. They followed the group upstairs. Halfway up, Natalie looked over the railing toward the entrance hall and felt an unexpected sadness. It was less like seeing the house for the first time than returning after a long absence and discovering that nothing had been preserved the way she remembered it. The first bedroom felt ordinary. So did the nursery. Natalie began to relax, deciding the missing staircase had been a lucky guess, encouraged by the kitchen's layout. Then they approached the room at the back of the hallway. Before the guide opened the door, Natalie stopped. Pressure gathered in her chest, making it difficult to take a full breath. She had no reason to fear the room, yet every instinct told her not to enter it. Allison stayed beside her while the others went inside. The guide explained that the room had originally been used by a child. Later, it became a sewing room, and part of it was converted into a bathroom during the apartment years. From the hallway, Natalie could see a narrow bed, a washstand, and sunlight falling across the floor. There was nothing frightening inside. Still, grief rose through her so quickly that her eyes filled with tears. She turned away before anyone noticed. Allison followed her toward a window at the end of the hallway and asked whether she wanted to leave. Natalie nodded, embarrassed by her reaction. She couldn't explain. Before going downstairs, she glanced through the window. She knew what she would see before she looked. A sloping yard, a low stone wall, and the roof of an old carriage house beyond it. The carriage house was gone, but the stone wall remained. Natalie stared at the empty space where she had expected the building to stand. In her mind, she could see its dark roof and the path leading from its door to the back of the house. The image lasted only a moment, but it felt like the memory of something that had disappeared. She and Allison left the tour early. Outside, Natalie felt better almost immediately. As they walked back toward their bed and breakfast, she tried to find ordinary explanations. Historic houses often had similar layouts. Perhaps she had seen the house online and forgotten about it. Maybe the guide had mentioned the staircase and neither of them consciously remembered. Allison listened, but she had been standing beside Natalie when she asked about the staircase. She knew the guide hadn't mentioned it. They returned to the same questions throughout the evening. Neither of them mentioned reincarnation. At that point, the idea would have seemed ridiculous. That night, Natalie dreamed she was climbing the narrow staircase behind the kitchen, carrying folded linens in her arms. At the top, she entered the hallway and stopped outside the room she had refused to enter during the tour. Someone was crying behind the closed door. Natalie reached for the handle, but woke before she touched it. Natalie woke with her hand stretched toward the bedside table. For a few seconds, the room at the bed and breakfast seemed unfamiliar. She could still hear someone crying behind the closed bedroom door. Then Allison shifted in the other bed, and Natalie remembered the tour, the missing staircase, and the room she had refused to enter. The dream had felt different from an ordinary dream. She remembered the rough wall beside the stairs, the weight of the linens in her arms, and the certainty that she had climbed those steps many times. The next morning, Natalie described the dream over breakfast. Allison thought it was probably a continuation of what had happened during the tour. They had spent much of the evening discussing the staircase and upstairs bedroom, so it made sense that Natalie's mind would build a dream around them. Natalie agreed. It was the explanation she would have offered anyone else. They spent their final day visiting shops and walking through another part of town. Natalie enjoyed herself, but she kept thinking about the crying behind the door. By the time they left the next morning, she was ready to put the experience behind her. For almost a week, she did. Then she dreamed about the house again. This time, she stood at the upstairs window. The carriage house was visible beyond the stone wall, and a wagon moved slowly along the road behind it. Natalie couldn't see who was driving, but she knew she was waiting for that person. She also knew she didn't want them to enter the house. When she woke, her heart was pounding. She could picture the carriage house clearly, down to a smaller door on one side and a tree near the corner. She had no way of knowing whether any of it was accurate. Over the next 2 weeks, Natalie had the first dream twice more. Each time she climbed the back staircase carrying folded linens and stopped outside the bedroom. She never saw her reflection or learned who she was. She simply knew that she was younger and belonged in the house, although the house didn't belong to her. During the final dream, Natalie smelled smoke. She woke coughing and searched her home, convinced something was burning. She checked the kitchen, the outlets, and the furnace before opening the front door to see whether the smell came from outside. There was nothing. The following evening, Allison came over and they talked through everything that had happened. They began with the most reasonable possibility. Natalie had absorbed information about the house without consciously remembering it. They searched the websites Allison had visited while planning the vacation, but the historic house wasn't on any of them. Allison had booked the bed and breakfast and found restaurant recommendations. They had discovered the house only because they happened to walk past it. They read about deja vu, vivid dreams, and forgotten memories. One article explained how people could retain information they no longer remembered learning. Another described how dreams combined recent experiences with older memories and emotions. Those explanations accounted for parts of Natalie's experience, but not for how she knew about the staircase before the guide mentioned it. Much later that evening, Allison wondered whether this was the kind of experience people meant when they claimed to remember a past life. Neither sister knew much about reincarnation, Natalie associated it with stories about young children who spoke of families they had known before they were born. She had never heard of an adult recognizing a place from another life, and neither woman was convinced that was what had happened. That was how they first encountered past life regression. Natalie initially assumed it involved hypnosis used to recover childhood memories. Instead, they found claims that people under hypnosis could remember names, places, and events from previous lives. Both women were skeptical. They wondered whether people simply followed suggestions and created whatever story they thought the hypnotist expected. Several practitioners they found made extravagant promises, and some appeared more interested in selling expensive packages than explaining the process. They stopped searching without making a decision. Natalie had no more dreams for several days and began to think the experience had run its course. Then one morning, she stood before her linen closet with a stack of folded sheets in her arms. The sight brought the staircase back so vividly that she nearly dropped them. That evening, the sisters resumed their search. This time, they found a woman whose office was a little more than 2 hours away. Her website described regression as guided hypnosis that could produce genuine memories, symbolic stories, or material created by the subconscious. She made no claim that every experience proved a former life. That uncertainty made her seem more trustworthy. Natalie called the following afternoon. She said only that she had visited a historic house, experienced an unusual sense of familiarity, and later dreamed about the same place. She didn't name the town or mention the staircase, bedroom, child, or smoke. The woman explained that she couldn't promise an answer. Anything Natalie experienced during a session would need to be considered carefully, especially because she had already toured the house. Regression might help her explore why the place affected her so strongly, but it couldn't prove reincarnation. Natalie scheduled an appointment. For the next several days, she questioned her decision. Driving more than 2 hours to be hypnotized by a stranger sometimes seemed ridiculous. Allison had doubts too, but agreed to go with her. They decided they would leave if anything about the woman or her office made them uncomfortable. On the morning of the appointment, Natalie nearly canceled. She hadn't dreamed about the house again, and part of her wanted to accept that the experience was over. Then she remembered the grief outside the bedroom and the certainty of the narrow staircase beneath her feet. 2 hours later, Natalie and Allison sat in the car outside a small office building, neither of them making a move to get out. Natalie still didn't believe she had lived before. She only knew that some part of her remembered that house. Natalie and Allison remained in the car for nearly 10 minutes. They went over their agreement one more time. If the woman asked leading questions, supplied details, or seemed determined to convince Natalie that she had lived before, they would leave. The office was more ordinary than either expected. The woman conducting the session explained that hypnosis wouldn't make Natalie unconscious. She would remain aware of where she was and could stop at any time. She also repeated that anything Natalie experienced might be a memory, a symbolic story, or something created by her imagination. Natalie shared only what she had said on the phone. She had toured a historic house, felt that she recognized parts of it, and later dreamed about the same place. Allison didn't add anything. Once Allison moved to an adjoining room, Natalie settled into a reclining chair and followed a series of breathing exercises. She concentrated on the woman's voice and imagined herself descending a long staircase as her body relaxed. At first, nothing happened. Natalie remained aware of the chair beneath her and the low sound of traffic outside. She wondered whether she was too skeptical to be hypnotized and felt embarrassed that Allison had driven so far for something that might not work. Then the woman asked her to allow an image to form without deciding whether it was a memory or imagination. Natalie saw her hands resting against a dark skirt. The image was faint and disappeared when she tried to examine it. The woman reminded her not to force anything and asked what she noticed around her. Natalie became aware of a kitchen. It was warmer and darker than the restored kitchen she had visited. A fire burned beneath a heavy iron surface and damp fabric hung nearby to dry. When Natalie looked toward the wall beside the fireplace, the narrow staircase was there. She began climbing it with folded linens in her arms. The steps were steep enough that she had to turn slightly, keeping one hand against the rough wall. At the top, she entered the hallway and immediately became distressed. The linens belonged in the back bedroom, but she didn't want to go near it. The scene shifted. Natalie was downstairs at night, and the house was dark except for a lamp somewhere behind her. A child cried overhead, followed by footsteps crossing the upstairs hallway. Natalie knew the child had been locked in the room. She couldn't see who had locked the door or explain how she knew. She felt only fear of a man whose return she had been watching for through the upstairs window. In her mind, she saw his wagon moving along the road beyond the carriage house. The image changed again. Her breathing quickened, but the woman reminded her that she was safe in the office. Natalie was now at the top of the back staircase. Smoke filled the hallway and the bedroom door was closed. She tried the handle, called to the child, and struck the door with her shoulder. The crying stopped. Natalie began to weep. The rest came in scattered pieces, someone pulling her away from the door, cold ground beneath her bare feet, and smoke pouring from the rear of the house as people gathered outside. She kept repeating that she should have opened the door. The woman gradually ended the regression and brought Natalie's attention back to the office. When Natalie opened her eyes, she was surprised to find tears on her face. She remembered the entire session and had never felt unconscious, yet nearly an hour had passed. Allison joined them while they discussed what Natalie had experienced. The woman didn't attempt to interpret it. The images might have represented a former life, but they could just as easily have come from Natalie's dreams, the tour, or something personal that had nothing to do with the house. Natalie appreciated her honesty, even though it left her without a clear answer. On the drive home, she told Allison everything. The kitchen and staircase were consistent with the tour, while the linens, wagon, crying child, and smoke had already appeared in her dreams. Only one part felt new. Her certainty that the child had been locked inside the back bedroom during a fire. They agreed not to treat the regression as evidence until they learned more about the house. That evening, Allison searched old newspaper archives while Natalie looked through the preservation group's website. The public history focused on the house's architecture, its original family, and the years it had been divided into apartments. It said nothing about a fire or a child's death. Natalie felt both relieved and disappointed. The regression might have woven an emotional story around the details she had learned during the tour, just as she had feared. 2 days later, Allison found a short newspaper article from the winter of 1894. The scanned print was difficult to read, but the article described a fire that damaged an upstairs bedroom at the rear of the house. A young girl had been overcome by smoke before she could be removed. She died the following morning. The article did not say the child had been locked inside. It didn't mention a household worker or anyone trying to reach her. The fire was believed to have started when a lamp overturned, although the exact cause was never determined. Natalie read the article several times. It confirmed only part of what she had experienced. She had already learned that the room belonged to a child, and smoke had appeared in her dreams before the regression. It was possible she had encountered the story somewhere and forgotten it, although neither sister could find it on any of the websites they had viewed before the trip. Allison contacted the preservation group and asked whether the house had ever suffered a fire. She didn't mention Natalie or the regression. A volunteer confirmed that a small fire had occurred in one of the rear bedrooms during the 1890s. It was rarely discussed during tours because so little reliable information about it had survived. That was as far as their research could take them, and they found no list of household employees and no explanation for why Natalie experienced the house from the perspective of someone carrying linens up the servants' staircase. There was no photograph of a woman who resembled her, and no name that awakened another memory. The bedroom door might never have been locked. Natalie remained skeptical of the regression. She understood how easily her mind could have used details from the tour to create a convincing scene. Yet the session didn't explain what had led her there in the first place. Before she knew about the fire or the child's death, she had recognized the missing staircase and felt overwhelming grief outside the back bedroom. The dream stopped after the regression. Months later, Natalie still couldn't say she believed in reincarnation. If someone asked whether she thought she had lived in the house, she admitted she didn't know. She had no proof, and too much of what she experienced could be explained in other ways. But she knew how it had felt to stand in that restored kitchen and remember something that was no longer there. Whatever happened in that house, the first thing that returned to her wasn't a name, a face, or even the fire. It was the staircase she had climbed every day.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.